Homelessness is a persistent problem, and it's not limited to major cities like Milwaukee or Madison. It's right here in western Wisconsin, too, right in our backyards. But statewide data has shown that the total number of statewide homeless has stayed pretty much the same since 2011. So does that mean we've seen our state's homeless population kind of top out? And how do those numbers translate to our region? This hour on the West Side, we'll talk about homelessness in western Wisconsin, and we'll get a look at some of the unreleased data on this issue from experts in our region. I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side. And as I mentioned today, I'm joined by three experts in the field of homelessness and homelessness prevention in western Wisconsin. First, I'd like to welcome Dan Robinson. Dan is the director of the Sojourner House Homeless Shelter in Eau Claire that was built in 2011. Dan Robinson, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you, and I'm very happy to be here and be able to speak to western Wisconsin about the situation we have here in Eau Claire.
Absolutely. Well, we look forward to the discussion. Thank you so much. And also joining me this hour is Carrie Poser, and she is with the Institute for Community Alliances. We'll get into more about what that is and also her role in collecting and gathering all this homeless data. Carrie Poser, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And last but not least, we've got the Social Assets Director for Community Action Agency WestCAP, and she is Robin Thibodeau. Robin, thank you so much for being on the West Side.
Thank you.
So I think the first thing that would be helpful to our listeners, and reminder, listeners, if you've got a question or a comment for our guests, give us a call. 1-800-228-5615 is the number. You can talk to Robin Thibodeau, Carrie Poser, and or Dan Robinson. Also, if you have a story of being in a homeless situation or near homelessness, give us a call. Let us know. If you know someone who has struggled with this finding housing in the past, give us a call, 800-228-5615. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page. So I think it would be helpful if we kind of, before diving into the data, I think it's important to understand what that data reflects. That is, what is homelessness and what, you know, what the actual specific definition is, because I imagine there is a pretty specific definition. Robin Thibodeau, let's start with you.
Sure. Well, HUD, which provides most of the funding for permanent housing, transitional housing, and prevention.
That's the Federal Housing and Urban Development?
Correct. That's Housing and Urban Development mm-hmm. at the federal level. They define homelessness as literally homeless, meaning you are sleeping in your car, on the street, somewhere not fit for human habitation.
Mm-hmm.
That's what directs most of our eligibility for programs, is that literal definition of homelessness.
All right. Carrie Poser, does that mean that a person that might be left to kind of couch surfing, as they call it, they don't count as homeless?
Two parts. One, for the purposes of the point in time, HUD is very specific about who you're allowed to count. So mm-hmm. What Robin was saying about literally homeless is who gets counted for the point in time.
Okay.
That's the definition of the unsheltered count, somebody that's sleeping outside in their car, in a park, in a storage facility. In terms of the sheltered count, when we talk about the point in time, that's places like emergency shelters or homeless motel vouchers paid for by organizations. Then there is the transitional housing count. Those particular programs have some different rules. Now, the overall homeless definition is the part that Robin said. Then there's three more components to the homeless definition. Again, the point in time focuses strictly on the literally homeless piece. But for many other programming, you'll hear people talk about different parts of that homeless definition. So literally homeless, then you have something called imminently homeless, which means you're going to lose your housing in 14 days.
Hmm.
It means you're about to be evicted from your place of residence, whether that is a place you're paying for or it's a place that you're crashing. So if you're staying with a friend or family and they are telling you you're going to be on the street in 14 days, you have no other funding, no other support networks to help you get permanent housing, that would be considered homeless. There's a lot more documentation that goes with proving that, but that is a component. The third one has to do with youth. It is an attempt by HUD to deal with the fact that the schools use a different definition than we do. And so with that, there are a whole lot of different factors that you have to take into consideration in order to define a child that is 17 or 18 years old as homeless on their own. So that's not used very often. And then the fourth one are victims of domestic violence.
Okay.
People fleeing or attempting to flee.
So we've got a lot of categories, subcategories, and, and maybe we can thank the bureaucracy of the federal and state government for that. But I'm wondering, this homelessness at Dan Robinson, does it look different in rural areas? Or not that Eau Claire is a rural area, but, you know, we serve a lot of areas that are rural. Does it look different in that kind of situation than it does in, say, a Milwaukee or Madison? And that's a tough question even to ask because, you know, what does it look like?
Yeah, I think it does look a little bit different because here in Eau Claire County and the Chippewa Valley, we try really hard. We have a lot of agencies that work really hard to try to help people who are homeless, people who have lost their place to stay, and also food. Another thing is food. We have some great agencies that help supply food for people who are in need. So in I think in the bigger cities, you'll see more people who want to be homeless. That's their lifestyle. They choose.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Eau Claire, there's a few, but not many, that choose the homeless lifestyle. Okay, so that's just a small portion of people. So that I think, is the biggest difference. In the bigger cities, we have people who choose to be homeless. Here in Eau Claire, there's people who are homeless that aren't choosing to be homeless, and they want to find a job. They want to find affordable housing. They want help to get back on their feet and to get out of that situation.
So what kind of things can we talked about, you know, someone being evicted for whatever reason, but – I mean, from the stories that you've heard, Dan, what kind of things help a person kind of slip into homelessness? And is it does it catch them by surprise?
Yes. For the most part, you're always thinking, it'll never happen to me. You know, I'm going to be okay. But suppose, you know, there's a variety of different scenarios. So suppose you were working a seasonal job prior to Christmas and holidays. Okay, so now that's over. So January, you know, you ran out of funding. You didn't find another job. I think the economy takes a turn after January. Things tighten up. They lay off people in other areas. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon all your money is ran out and you're homeless.
A reminder, we're talking about homelessness in Western Wisconsin this hour on the West Side. I'm joined by Dan Robinson. He's the director of the Sojourner House in Eau Claire. Carrie Poser works with the Institute for Community Alliances and also helps put together a lot of the data that we see as far as homelessness counts and everything else involved with that. And we're joined by Robin Thibodeau. She's the Social Assets Director for Community Action Agency WestCAP. The number to call in with a question or a comment is 1-800-228-5615. If you or someone you know has experienced this situation of finding themselves without shelter, give us a call. Share your story. It would definitely help with the conversation. 800-228-5615. And what about stigma? I mean, how well do people even understand what you all work with? Carrie, I'm seeing you shake your head a little bit.
I think very often in the rural area, you don't perceive that there is homelessness.
Even possible?
Exactly. And I think that is an intense misconception. And I think we have the data to support that, you know, just in January of 2013, so just last year, you had, based on the numbers that we have in front of us, just in the Dairyland area, which is Buffalo, Jackson, Tremplo, and Eau Claire County, Chippewa County, and then the West Central region, which is Barron, Polk, Pepin, Pierce, Dunn, and St. Croix County, there were, let's see, we had 13 people sleeping on the street. You had 241 people that were in a transitional housing program, which means it's not their own apartment. They're receiving rental assistance through another organization. you had 227 people that were in an emergency shelter situation. So that's 481 people on that strict definition that we talked about earlier that were homeless in January on one night in January. So to me, yes, there are certainly you can see homelessness. It's more obvious whether you're in the Twin Cities, whether you're in Madison or Milwaukee. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist here. I think people are much better at hiding in the rural area. I think there's a lot more places that you're not going to trek to go find people during the point in time in a rural area. We're not going to go through every campground. We're not going to go through every forest, pieces of farmland, every hunting shack or fishing shack out in a rural community. So I actually think that this is, for the unsheltered count, I certainly think it's a low number.
And about that, I'm interested in stigma. Because we're not confronted with it daily, mm-hmm. is there more of a stigma in more rural areas, do you think?
Oh, I definitely think so. And you know, I hear people say out in the community that, you know, well, they should just go get a job or they just are lazy or, right. you know, and people don't understand that people get in situations that, you know, I know a family just recently, dad got sick and can't work. Mom works a minimum wage job and it's not enough money to pay the rent. So even though they're trying and they do have jobs, things happen. And if you don't have a safety net, then you end up on the street. You get evicted.
And Dan, that stigma, does that also transfer, you know, since it's not in everybody's, you know, face, since we're not so exposed to it, or maybe kind of, acclimatized or kind of like used to it, acclimated. Anyway, mm-hmm. because of that, the people themselves that find themselves in homelessness, Carrie mentioned that they're good at hiding. Mm-hmm. Are they actually hiding from, you know, admitting mm-hmm. it?
Well, when we did the point in time, this is a point I'd like to bring up. It's late in the evening on January 25th.
Right.
You know, the last Wednesday of the month in January. People are not, they're not only hiding, they're trying to keep warm.
Right.
They're in somewhere. They're doing something. You know, if they're in a... I mean, we're looking in parking lots at Walmart, at Kmart, at Shopko. We're looking at restaurants. We're going into the 24-hour restaurants, the McDonald's. Where some people might take a bus and go to Turtle Lake that night or any night. It's free. It's a place to go where you can sleep on the bus. You get to Turtle Lake. You find a corner. You rest. You take the bus back. You know, anything, they're survivors. Anything they can do to survive, they do, because it's January, it's cold, and this year was, fortunately this year it wasn't as bad on that particular day. So we actually got out of our vehicles and we went through parking lots. We went down along the river by the caves. We went through the parks, looked at some of the trails that go into the woods to see if there was fresh tracks. We looked under bridges. We got out of our vehicles and we went under bridges to look to see if there was somebody there, because it was a very comfortable evening to be doing that. But if it's 30 below zero, the things that they ask us to do to find these people at that time of night is not a really good situation. It's not really good. But we did find people. We did. They were in their vehicles. They turned their vehicles on for an hour or two, warm it up, and then turn them back off again. One gentleman was just wandering the streets. He didn't have anywhere to go. And I know where he probably would have ended up, but he was just wandering the streets because he didn't have any place to go. You know, they bundle up. They got good, warm clothing. If their lifestyle is to be homeless, they know how to take care of themselves. There's a couple of what I've referred to in the past as mountain men who literally are living outside and have lived outside all winter, all this winter, when it was 30 below zero, outside. But that's what they chose to do because they don't want to be inside, and they don't have enough money to make a living or to have an apartment or to all the things that go with an apartment. It's not just having an apartment, but it's having utilities paid. If you get a cheap apartment, you have to pay the utilities. If you get an expensive apartment, they might include some of the utilities. Mm-hmm. You maybe don't have any credit with the utility companies. That's good. So you can't get utilities. So, I mean, it's a catch-22 wherever you go to look at, you know, how are you going to get from this homeless situation into a situation where you can actually do things. So it's very tough. So fortunately, we have these homeless shelters, and we do these counts, and we do these, we gather this information so that we know that there are people out there that have this happening to them, both in Eau Claire and surrounding areas. Now, say, for instance, you become homeless in a small town. I hate to even say mention any towns because I don't want anybody to think that there's homeless people coming from those towns. But let's just say, you know, Fall Creek, Elk Mound, Mondovi, Duran. There's no homeless shelters in those towns. So they need to come to the city. So there we might see a few people, a few more people that are homeless, but they don't want to stay here. They want to get a job and they want to go back to their town. They want to go back to their family, where they live. So the homeless shelter is helping them to get from point A to point B, and we see that all the time, and it's wonderful. It's a huge joy to see people get back on their feet, get a job, and move forward. But then there's those that don't, and that's where we constantly will have a homeless situation here and forever, everywhere.
For those that choose it.
Well, not only those that choose it, but those that can't get to that point.
All right, Carrie?
Well, I was going to say to add to that, factor onto that is the lack of affordable housing and the lack of living wage jobs. I mean, if you add all the layers of what Dan was talking about and then add the fact that apartments are expensive, waiting lists for housing is long, and then they don't have jobs to be able to make money to then pay for their rent. I mean, it's a cycle that is going to keep these numbers high until we do something about those particular components.
Well, let's take our first break here. When we come back, I want to talk about what the point-in-time count is. We've already referenced it a few times. I think we get through the nuts and bolts of that and then start getting to the numbers. We'll get a better picture of what's happening here in western Wisconsin. We're talking about homelessness in our region, right in our backyards. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We've got Dan Robinson, director of the Sojourner House in Eau Claire, on the program. Also have Robin Thibodeau. She's the social assets director for WestCap. And Carrie Poser is with the Institute for Community Alliances. The number again, 1-800-228-5615. We'll have more of the discussion right after this. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in this Monday morning. We're talking about homelessness in western Wisconsin. We've got three guests that are on the front lines of this issue in our region. We're joined by Carrie Poser of the Institute for Community Alliances, Dan Robinson. He's the director of the Sojourner House in Eau Claire, and Robin Thibodeau is social assets director for the community action agency WestCap. If you've got a question or comment, let us know, 800-228-5615. We can also take comments on Facebook if you want to remain somewhat anonymous. You can post there. So we're talking a lot about something called the PIT count, or the point-in-time count. Carrie, since you are the number cruncher on this, what is it and what's the goal of the point in time count? When does it happen? I mean, we already mentioned the third Wednesday of January, the 25th. The fourth Wednesday. And then also is the last Wednesday in July too, right?
Yep.
Okay,
so the point in time is a HUD required thing that anybody that receives McKinney-Vento funding has to participate in. So McKinney-Vento means HUD funds, and then in the state of Wisconsin, if you get something called ESG, which is federal dollars to help with rapid rehousing and prevention, you're required to participate in this overnight street count. Mm-hmm. HUD requires it to be done in January. So it's so HUD gives you a window, gives every state a window of when you have to do it. And the state of Wisconsin has worked together with the Balance of State, Madison, Milwaukee, and Racine to group together to do it all on the same night.
Balance of State means what?
Balance of State means the 69 counties in Wisconsin other than Dane, Milwaukee, and Racine.
Sure.
So with that being said, we, and this isn't true for every state in the United States, but we work together to do it on the same night. So from sundown to sunup. It's the last Wednesday in January, and then we choose to do it the last Wednesday in July as well to give a seasonal count to show the difference in Wisconsin between what it looks like in July and what it looks like, obviously, in January.
Mm-hmm.
So over the point in time, we collate data. So all providers turn in information and data to a central place. So Balance of State sends it to me, and then I work together with other members of the ICA team to put in the statewide data. So we end up with the state of Wisconsin information. So what happens there? Well, every April we have to submit that information to a federal database that then takes that information from all the other states in the country, and then they put that into something called AHAR, which is an annual homeless assessment report, and mm-hmm. that gets turned into Congress to say, this is how we're doing on ending homelessness in this country.
And then ideally they take that and then allocate funding accordingly.
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
But that is basically the scorecard for how we're doing to end homelessness in this country.
All right. So with that, you know, those it's twice and or it happens twice a year, the point in time counts. When I looked at the statewide data starting right after when the recession hit, the number or the year of 2009, there were a total of around 5,000 people that were physically counted as homeless across the state, just the total statewide number. That number crept up little by little until 2011 when it was just over 6,000, again, statewide. But since then, it seems like from the data that I've gotten from Chris Layshock and from yourselves, it seems like statewide that number has stayed right around 6,000. So I'm wondering, Robin Thibodeau, does that mean homelessness is – we're seeing it stabilize in Wisconsin, that we've hit some kind of a ceiling?
I don't know if I can speak to that exactly. I would say that the economic recovery has not gone deep, and the folks that we see in our transitional housing programs and our permanent housing programs are not able to get living wage jobs. And as costs have gone up, wages have not gone up. And so people, like I was talking about before, if you're living on check to check or barely check to check, and then something happens, you end up in homelessness. So until we address the lack of affordable housing and living wage jobs, we're going to continue to probably see that number remain high.
And Carrie?
And I also want to point out that this stabilization or this plateau that we're talking about, it's incremental going up, is true in the entire United States, which is why HUD in the last year has said, we're not moving the needle, we're not ending homelessness, and we continue to get funding to end homelessness, and we're not doing it. So you guys need to come up with some changes. And they have tasked groups like what Robin and I are members of. We are both on the board of directors for the Balance of State. And with that being said, we've been tasked with using HUD's money more efficiently and more effectively to make some hard choices and hard decisions about what kind of programs we're going to continue to fund, which requires communities to make changes. One of those changes is happening in Eau Claire. As part of the application for federal funding, one of the organizations, Western Dairyland, wrote for a new permanent supportive housing grant that would provide housing units for up to 15 chronically homeless people, which is a brand new concept in Eau Claire. They don't have any of those kinds of programs.
And this is new as in?
New as in once we hear from HUD whether or not it's funded, which should be sometime in the next couple of months, then they would do contracts with HUD and then they'd be able to roll.
And that's what kind of housing?
It's called permanent supportive housing.
Permanent supportive housing.
Which means that the residents, the people that would be enrolled in the program would have rent payment assistance along with intensive wraparound case management services. They have to be chronically homeless, which means that they either, it can be a family or an individual, One of the adults has to have a disabling condition, and they have to have been homeless 4 times in the last 3 years or 1 year continuously.
Well, that's kind of interesting. So that's happening other places in the state, mm-hmm. but here in our region, Eau Claire is the testbed.
Eau Claire wrote for a new application for this program. I mean, anybody could have written for it, and the board selected Western Dairyland as one of the recipients. Given the need, given the data that came out of, honestly, for Dan's organization coming on board with the statewide database was helpful in illustrating who and the different kinds of people that are being served in Eau Claire that weren't before. So that was helpful to support their application.
Great. Dan, how big of a help? We're talking 15 mm-hmm. Units mm-hmm. or for 15 families. That doesn't sound like a lot, but how big of a deal will that be?
We're very excited about this. This is awesome because Carrie said this very fast.
Yes, she did.
Chronically homeless people with physical or mental problems. Okay. So they have many strikes against them when it comes to getting a job, having enough Social Security insurance or Social Security disability insurance to be able to afford an apartment. And maybe if they could afford an apartment, maybe because of their disability, they have several strikes already against them. So when we add in the case management of these folks, now we're really helping them. Because I have Parkinson's disease, and I have a real hard time managing and keeping my apartment clean. Now I can get an apartment and somebody will help me take care of it. And it's phenomenal. And 15, we're glad to have 15 mm-hmm. Possible apartments, but we could certainly use more because there are a lot of people that fall into this chronically homeless category who are just struggling month by month to get by. Yes, they do get a Social Security disability check, but it's not enough. It's not enough to make a difference in their living situation. So we're very excited about this.
That's very cool. Yeah. Very cool. And I guess I'll go to Carrie for this, and maybe Robin can talk about it too, since you are both on the balance of state portion of the point in time count. But locally, we talked about the statewide numbers, and locally, according to what you've compiled, Carrie, mm-hmm. we've got about 227 people that were counted this January in emergency shelters. So how does that reflect? I mean, do the statewide numbers have any bearing on this, or are we just kind of our own thing entirely?
Well, it appears that looking at this so we looked at January 2013, July 2013, and then I looked at July 2012. The actual January 2014 numbers aren't done yet.
Right.
It is a work in progress that should be done shortly.
Right.
But looking at that, it seems rather consistent that at least in terms of the emergency shelter, the balance of the Dairyland, Chippewa, West Central region comprises about 13% of the entire balance of state. Mm-hmm. So the balance of state numbers maybe in January 2013 was 1,847 people, and just these 11 counties make up about 12 or 13% of that.
Okay. And so, again, it seems like a small number, Robin, that some people might think we're talking about hundreds of people in a 11 county area or more. You know, it seems small.
Well, I guess in terms of the entire population of the area, it may seem small, but when you think about the cost of having people homeless, and even that number, you're talking about, shelters having to get community funding to remain open. And even though this is the number in shelters, you can bet that those shelters were full. And so how many more people weren't in shelter?
Mm-hmm.
So trips to the emergency room because people don't have health insurance. Cost of kids moving from school to school and the interruptions in their education that are going to you know, impact them later in life and continue that cycle. So even though, you know, in terms of the entire population, it may seem like a small amount, if you add up the social costs of people being in a homeless situation, it's an incredible impact to those families and to the entire community.
Hmm. And I guess my other point to that would be, while the number may seem small, I guess my flip side to that is, so if it's a small number, then why don't we end it? Why don't community members step up and offer some funding or some other services and let's just take care of it, mm-hmm. if it's such a small number? But I think that, to Robin's point, it's a much bigger issue. It's a much bigger impact. And we are just talking about this little piece. I mean, there's numbers and data for the entire state that can be broken up into different chunks. And if each kind of regional chunk were to take care of their own, then we wouldn't have homelessness in Wisconsin, now would we?
Right. There's more terms than I can get my head around here. Emergency shelter, Dan Robinson, would the Sojourner House qualify as an emergency shelter?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
And the Sojourner Homeless Shelter is for only men and women over the age of 18. So right. We don't deal with any families or children under 18. Mm-hmm. So this is just something that's unique, something that we thought we would go forward with to help take off some of the pressure from the Interfaith Hospitality House or the Bolton House or Western Dairyland, who has homeless housing also. But they would be able to deal specifically with people who have children and not have to be constantly turning away single adults. So we are focused on single adults, men and women over the age of 18.
And, you know, we're looking at data. What, as far as your shelter, how many beds have you got there?
We can take in 48.
48. And since 2011, since you opened up, has it been at capacity or have you had some room?
We have some room. We're at like 44. On average. Mm-hmm. So we have maxed out a few times, but on average, 44.
So since not that you have to be maxed out every time to say that there's a need out there, but is there still need for more shelters in this area, do you think?
Well, I don't think more shelters is the answer to the situation. I think it's more affordable housing and jobs. I mean, that's the answer. This housing unit with Western Dairyland is a great step forward. Mm-hmm. One thing I have to say, though, when we take care of this group of people, other people are going to fall right into that same thing. I mean, this is an ongoing problem. So, I mean, we see five guys at the first of the month move out. They get a job, they get enough money, they get an apartment. You know, it's fantastic. And then we see six guys come in a week later from somewheres else. You know, so our numbers are constantly rolling over, new faces all the time. And then we have the chronically homeless that are continuing to be there. So there's, you know, it's what I often define it as. There's three types of homeless people within the Sojourner Homeless Shelter. One is transitional. Somebody's just moving from point A to point B. They need a couple of nights, you know, maybe a week, and boom, they're gone. Okay, then we have the chronic homeless people who are there. They fit into that definition of chronic homelessness. And then there's the situationally homeless people who are just, they lost their job, they lost their apartment, they lost their ability to stay with their friend or whatever the situation may be. They're only going to be there for a short time till they get back on their feet. And being able to have them come to the Sojourner House to get back on their feet, it helps everybody because we provide them with a place to sleep, a place to wash their clothes, take a shower. We have both a supper at night and breakfast in the morning. We have internet. We have the ability to receive your mail there, so you can have a location to receive your mail. We can socialize. We have, and besides that, we have helps there. Access to different agencies. We can show them how to get in contact with the Veterans Association, how to get in contact with the city housing, how to get in contact with AA meeting, whatever the case may be. We can help them, point them in that direction. St. Lawrence Community Services, which is another program run by Catholic Charities, we can help them, point them in that direction if there's a place that or something that they can do to help. So we offer a lot of things. So we have people coming in and going and people coming in and going, and it's a turnover all the time. So.
Another term before we take our final break and kind of get into you know, what people can do or what more needs to be done. Robin, transitional housing, that's a term on the pointed time count. Does that mean something that an agency like yours has helped set up as far as paying a few months rent or something?
Yes, transitional housing takes people. We take people directly out of shelter, so they have to meet the HUD definition of homelessness. And the program pays a rent subsidy. We help people, our case managers help connect people to all the things that Dan was talking about, jobs, education, food share, medical assistance, all the community resources that are available to help that family get back on their feet. And then the program can be for up to 24 months. And the goal is to get that family or individual stable so that they can continue successfully in permanent housing.
And at least looking at the numbers from Dairyland, Chippewa, and West Central, that seems to be pretty consistent, at least from July 2012 to January 23. Is that because the amount of housing that you're able to set up is pretty much limited?
Yes. In our six-county area for West Central, that's Barron, Pepin, Pierce, Dunn, St. Croix, Polk. Mm-hmm. I knew I'd miss one. We have 21 units available, and in Chippewa County, we have 10 units available. So that number is stable for all of us, for Western Dairyland as well. So there's a limited amount available. Certainly more people could use it, but that's what we have funding for.
Carrie?
Yep, and just to point out that Western Dairyland doesn't have any transitional housing.
Okay.
Paid for by HUD. Now they have some other smaller transitional housing. Both Beacon and Western Dairyland have small transitional housing, as well as Bolton. I think it's only a few beds each. And then the Veterans Assistance Foundation has transitional housing for 20 units in Chippewa for vets.
Okay. Well, with that, we're going to take our final break. We're talking about homelessness in Western Wisconsin. We're crunching some of the data and kind of asking what it looks like on the ground level. We've got three experts who are on the front lines of this issue. Dan Robinson, he's the director of the Sojourner House in Eau Claire. Carrie Poser is with the Institute for Community Alliances, and Robin Thibodeau, Social Assets Director for WestCap. The number to call in with a question or a comment is 800-228-5615. Also, we'll be happy to let you share your stories or stories of some people you may know. 800-228-5615. We'll have more discussion and we'll wrap up the hour when we return. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about homelessness in Western Wisconsin, joined by Dan Robinson of the Sojourner House in Eau Claire, Carrie Poser of the Institute for Community Alliances, and Robin Thibodeau of WestCap. The number to call in, 1-800-228-5615. And we've got the phone lines wide open right now, 800-228-5615. I'm wondering about we're talking about the homeless point in time counts, and I'm wondering, are there any kind of weaknesses of the count? And Carrie, what I mean is, you know, can it just be, you know, a bad day when you don't get a whole lot of numbers, and then can that hurt funding for programs here in the Western Wisconsin area?
Yes. No. I mean, the answer is yes. So January 2013, many people may or may not remember, was a pretty bad snowstorm throughout most of Wisconsin,
okay.
which certainly made it more difficult for people that are tasked with going out and counting to be able to actually get out there and count, and people that may have been staying outside or in their car either went deeper so that we couldn't find them, or shelters oftentimes and have occasionally opened up beyond capacity to take in those extra people. Maybe a friend or a family member may be more likely to let somebody crash on their couch if it's super cold or if it's, you know, a super bad blizzard. So I guess with that being said, it is possible, and it's not a perfect count. By being consistent, however, by doing it the last Wednesday of January and July, by having our methodology be better, more prescriptive about what we want it to look like, I think we get better at doing it by reaching out to media and asking them to pay attention to the count and being aware of the count. I mean, I remember when we first started doing this, and I would let WEAU or one of the other local radio stations know that we're doing this. And it was, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't,
right.
What are you talking about? And then by the time 2013 rolls around, they know exactly what we're talking about. They're like, do you have those numbers yet for us? I mean, it opens up awareness. It encourages people to talk about this concept, this idea that there's homelessness. With, even if it's just about the point in time, at least that's a step in the right direction to get people talking about it. The federal government uses the point in time numbers to be able to predict and project how we're doing. They're looking at many different subpopulations. So they're looking at how are we doing with ending homelessness for families? How are we doing ending homelessness for veterans?
Mm-hmm.
How are we doing ending homelessness for the chronically homeless? And those are some of the big, they have a 10-year plan. So, of course, they want us to end homelessness for veterans and chronically homeless by 2015. They want to end family and youth homelessness by 2020 and then set a path for ending all homelessness. So with that, different incentives brings dollars. What I was talking about earlier about new permanent supportive housing projects, that's that idea that we need to increase the funding for chronically homeless people to get out of the circle of shelter and get them into permanent housing and then wrap those services around, reducing the barriers to getting into housing. What that means is they want us to adopt this housing first model, which is an idea that housing is a right and that they should get housing. And then you worry about the stabilization of, you know, their mental health or jobs or anything else. But you don't have limits to who can come into your program as long as they meet the definition. No income limits, no sobriety requirements, none of that.
Mm-hmm.
That housing should be the priority, especially in an idea that you're trying to end homelessness.
So they're telling you to be more creative with the funds that you have. Does that sounds an awful lot like well, we're going to give you less funding and you have to do more with what you have. Has that been the case, Robin Thibodeau, in the last, I don't know, since? I do know that, you know, when I started learning myself about this point in time count, I heard a lot about the stimulus, big boost of money for homeless prevention. That has dried up now, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And sequestration caused another cut in funding. We are expected to do more with less funding, and there are several unfunded mandates. For instance, across the nation, all agencies that receive COC funding, continuum of care funding from HUD, are expected to work within their regions to create a coordinated assessment system, which means that there will be no wrong door for anybody to come into that's experiencing homelessness and receive services. So this requires, you know, staff time and manpower that's taken away from actually serving people that are experiencing homelessness. And setting up that system. To set up the infrastructure so that that agencies all know what to do and how to assess somebody coming in and where's the best placement for them, which is a very wonderful thing for people. There shouldn't be a wrong door for people seeking help. And somebody should be able to ask any agency and get the best service possible instead of just a turn away or a Band-Aid or the wrong service. So it's a very good idea. The problem is that, you know, it does take staff time and it does take manpower, and there's not additional funding to do that. So,
Well, ballpark, I mean, is do you have a, well, funding has declined by X percentage?
5%.
About 5% since when?
Last year.
Since last year, and that is tied. That is tied to the sequestration.
Correct.
Okay. Well, it was 5% pretty much for
everybody, right? Across the board, generally.
Right. I mean, is there a point at which that 5% becomes too much to handle? I mean, are we getting near that?
Well, continued cuts of 5% are going to, you know.
I mean, what's the tipping point?
Well.
Is that a ridiculous question? It sounds like it was.
Well, every cut means less people are being served.
Sure.
So then you're going to see the numbers go up. Less resources mean more people in homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Less people able to be housed in these programs that we're talking about, rapid rehousing, permanent supportive housing, transitional housing, will then create a burden on the shelters, because that they don't get funded in the funding we're talking about with this 5% cut. This 5% cut is specifically talking about HUD funding for transitional, permanent, rapid rehousing services. So then you're going to see an influx of emergency shelters or unsheltered.
Dan Robinson, the Sojourner House is funded at least in part by – or it's part of Catholic Charities.
Yes, it's owned and operated by Catholic Charities, yes.
So does that mean the same kind of, you know, the HUD funding, 5% cut, does that still affect your agency, even though you have the financial backing of the organization like Catholic Charities?
Well, I'm not really sure on how all of the funding works and where we are in the red and the black or whatever.
Sure.
I know that I have a budget that I need to maintain, and I just maintain my budget and do the best I can with keeping the shelter open and running and making sure that everybody has the things that they need. So I don't know a whole lot about the funding.
All right. But I was checked out the website. I saw there was a video, 25,000 stays at Sojourner House. Is that still the number, or have you exceeded that?
Oh, we have exceeded that as of today, yes.
Okay.
I mean, 25,000 was probably 18 month.
Okay.
You know, maybe just under 2 year of overnight stays.
All right. Well, so we've got funding that is kind of declining, at least for certain programs related with homelessness prevention. We've got a lot of kind of turnaround that has been discussed. I guess I'm asking you to look in your crystal balls and say, I mean, can we beat this thing? What can we really end homelessness? Is it a thing that will ever end, Dan Robinson? Or can we just get after it the best we can?
I think we are getting after it the best we can. I'm not sure we can end it, but we certainly can decrease it in a large proportion. There's going to be people who are going to come into homelessness, and we can get them out of homelessness quicker. So I think there's always going to be, you know, a certain amount of homeless, but we can get them out and get them back into an apartment, back into the workforce quicker.
Sounds like that efficiency thing that Carrie mentioned. Carrie, what's your thoughts? I mean, the goals that were set forth by HUD, I mean, zero. I mean, it seems fairly lofty.
And I agree with Dan. I don't think it's necessarily about every time we do one of these counts, the numbers are going to be zero. But I certainly think it's going to be a better, more well-organized way of getting people served in the quickest way possible with the best services for them, not the best services for an agency. And so with that being said, getting people out, getting the length of stay shorter, reduces all kinds of issues, including the trauma that a family or an individual suffers as a result of being homeless. So I think that bettering our systems, being more cost-effective, being more efficient, all of those things will create a system and a coordinated system in this West Central that is going to help in the long run for the clients that are becoming homeless on the street, showing up at Dan's shelter, showing up in the West Central region. I think overall, when we come up with a plan and then we manage that plan and we use our resources correctly, we can do a better job for the community.
All right. Robin Thibodeau, your thoughts?
Yes. You know, even though funding is dropping, if we can prevent on, you know, on the prevention end, helping more people stay in their units and not fall into homelessness, that's certainly prevention's always cheaper than intervention. And then if we can serve people that do end up in the situation of homelessness faster, that reduces the cost to the community as a whole.
And very quickly, what can people do if they want to get involved, if they want to help out? What can they do, Robin?
Well, there's lots of volunteer opportunities. Go to any of our websites. And then also just donating to the agencies is we're all nonprofit agencies. That's always helpful.
Carrie?
I would say donating resources, time, money. Landlords that are interested in working with any of the organizations, certainly contacting Western Dairyland or WestCap would be helpful.
All right. Thank you all so much. I was just joined by Dan Robinson, director of Sojourner House in Eau Claire, Carrie Poser with the Institute for Community Alliances, and Robin Thibodeau, social assets director for WestCap. Thank you all so much for the discussion about homelessness in Western Wisconsin. Next week, we're going to have some lawmakers on talking about the rush to the end of the session. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.